Ukraine's Prosecutor General Irina Venediktova is investigating thousands of alleged war crimes in her country. She accuses Russian President Vladimir Putin of using a calculated strategy to target Ukrainian civilians. Here she is on Sky News recently explaining what she says are the tactics.
Kill, rape, torture, and other brutal things. It is strategy of war.
The use of sexual violence, including rape, during war is not new, but it's only in recent decades that these types of war crimes have been documented and prosecuted. Charlie Carpenter is a professor of political science at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, and she's researched conflict gender-based violence. Professor, welcome to the program.
It's good to be here with you.
When did the use of rape in war begin to be formally recognized?
Yes, well, rape was recognized in war back in the Middle Ages, and it was recognized in the 1949 Geneva Conventions, for example, but it wasn't explicitly prohibited until 1998, which was the year that the International Criminal Court statute came into being. And the reason it was not explicitly prohibited before is because earlier, when the Geneva Conventions were negotiated, countries didn't actually believe that they could stop soldiers from raping. So they wanted to sort of frown on this crime, but not actually prohibit it. And now, of course, we understand not only is it possible to prevent soldiers from rape, train them to not to commit other kinds of crimes as well. Not only that, but countries have a choice as to whether or not they will order soldiers to rape. And it's now understood that to either permit or order rape as a weapon of war is explicitly prohibited under the laws of war.
Well, that's important to note that these often are not random acts of depravity. Sexual violence is often a military tactic.
Yes, I wouldn't say often. I think it happens less often than it did in the past, but it can be used as a tactic of war. And when we talk about sexual violence, we should think not just of rape, but other forms of harassment that can happen to prisoners in detention, et cetera. And yes, some of that can go on in various armed conflicts as a formal policy by the state, as well as sometimes happening simply because the state has not taken adequate measures to prevent it.
To hear the stories of the sexual violence that is happening in Ukraine, I mean, they are horrific. The Ukraine Human Rights Ombudsman reports 25 teenage girls were kept in a basement in Bucha and gang raped. 9 of them are now pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other reports simply too violent and disturbing to recount here. How difficult is it to collect evidence and then prosecute cases like these during wartime?
I think it depends a lot on the nature of the war and the nature of the states that are at war. So in Bosnia-Herzegovina, for example, it was a civil war that occurred after the state institutions had mostly collapsed. So it was actually much harder to collect documentation and evidence there than it would be now in Ukraine. Ukraine has a functioning state. I am much more confident that victims will be able to come forward, report the crimes, evidence will be able to be gathered. And in fact, this is one of the key recommendations that Bosnian war crimes survivors and the researchers that have collected data on the Bosnian survivors, their advice for the Ukrainians is to document everything and to start doing that now. So it can be done. It has been much harder in some contexts like Rwanda and Congo and Bosnia than it will be in the Ukraine.
Hmm. You mentioned Bosnia. There are certainly other historical examples of sexual violence and rape being used. The so-called Rape of Berlin in 1945 by Soviet soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
The Rape of Nanjing in 1937, where as many as 20,000 women, including children and the elderly, were raped during the Japanese occupation. There is certainly a long and horrific history of systemic sexual violence during wartime, and the U.S. is not immune from these atrocities in Vietnam and other conflicts, Professor.
Yes, that's correct. I'm glad you mentioned, you know, the massacre at My Lai was not just a massacre, it was also a rape scene. And the U.S. has a history of sexual harassment of detainees in the War on Terror. But yes, there have been cases, like the ones you mentioned, where the policy of the belligerents has been sort of a wholehearted onslaught against the civilian population, and it is distressing to see so many indicators that that is the case in Russia's war against Ukraine as well.
The UN Security Council passed a resolution in 2008 stating that rape and sexual violence constitute war crimes and can be used when deciding whether genocide has been committed. But it seems there have been relatively few prosecutions. Why is that, Professor?
Well, that is a great question. One of the reasons is that there are few war crimes prosecutions generally compared to the number of acts that are committed that might be considered or prosecuted as war crimes. And that is a function of the fact that the international community does not have a standing court mandated to try all war crimes. The International Criminal Court is the closest thing to that, but it's a court of last resort. In theory, countries are supposed to punish their own war criminals first, which would mean it would be Russia's responsibility to punish its soldiers. Of course, what do you do in a case where it's quite possible the state has actually ordered troops to act this way? And that, of course, is an allegation that would need to be studied, analyzed, and adjudicated by a competent tribunal. Certainly, in the case of both Bosnia and Rwanda, you ended up with indictments and convictions where sexual violence was central. And at the Rwanda tribunal, you had a landmark ruling that rape could constitute genocide when carried out as part of a campaign to destroy an ethnic or racial group. However, there have been other cases, other wars, where sexual violence was very prominently documented, but was not included in the indictments. So the very first case that the ICC heard was a case against a rebel leader, Thomas Lubanga Dielo, and he was indicted not for sexual violence against women and girls, but for child recruitment, for child soldiers. And the reason for that, despite lots of evidence that his forces also engaged in rape, the reason for that was that the Office of the Prosecutor wanted a quick conviction. And so they focused on the crimes where they had the best evidence and were going to be able to get a conviction the fastest.
You recently traveled to the Polish border with Ukraine as a volunteer to help Ukrainian refugees. And I'm curious if this topic came up in any of the conversations that you had with the women there.
It's really an interesting question. The women I spoke to who were fleeing the war were primarily concerned with safety in flight. They had to leave their husbands behind. Some of them were traveling with small children. One of them was 9 months pregnant. She had fled to find a safe place to give birth, and she had actually left her little boy behind because she didn't feel she could flee safely with the baby and her son. So the boy was left behind with the father. And what was top of her mind was how much safer she would be from human traffickers, for example, if her husband were able to be with her. So the way this connects, I think, to what's happening across the border is that if men, fathers in particular, are held back from traveling with their families, it puts women and children who are fleeing a war more greatly at risk of other forms of sexual violence and exploitation. A lot of wartime sexual violence or conflict-related sexual violence happens through trafficking networks or other sorts of situations that women find themselves in as they flee a war zone.
Ukraine's prosecutor general has talked about the need to gather evidence of sexual crimes in Ukraine. How likely do you think it is that we will see successful prosecutions when this war is over?
I think it's very likely. We have seen the International Criminal Court has managed successful prosecutions in numbers of wars. Russia and Ukraine situation is within the jurisdiction of that court. We could easily see universal jurisdiction tribunals for Russian elites that travel outside of the country and find themselves in a country like Germany, who has had a recent history of successfully prosecuting war criminals from Syria. All of these options are possible. The United Nations is putting together a war crimes fact-finding commission. I know that they will be looking very closely at sexual violence, as well as bombardment and other forms of terror against civilians and detainees.
Charlie Carpenter is a professor of political science at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. Professor Carpenter, thank you for your insights.
Good to be with you.